So first, I am thrilled to introduce the first of our two speakers for tonight, Denise R. from Chicago. Denise is just, of course she recovered because she just did everything she was supposed to and did everything this book said. And one thing that is especially unique and wonderful about Denise is early on she said, I'm just giving my weight to God. So she weighs herself every 2 weeks and I'll get a text that says, God has decided that this week my weight should be whatever, whatever. And then recently was, God has decided that he was taking away X number of pounds of fear, resentment, and selfishness. And she is just a pleasure. And I am sure that everyone will be blessed and inspired by her story. All you, Denise.
Thanks, Janet. Ooh, I am going to start with a prayer. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know about myself, about this qualification. Please give me the words and help me be useful to others. Amen. I'm Denise R. from Chicago. Compulsive overeater, that is, recovered compulsive overeater. You know, I was thinking about my childhood, kind of, you know, writing this, putting some bullet points together for this lead. And you know, I was really active as a child, so my weight really didn't show much. I was in sports, I was in dance, gymnastics, cheerleading. So my compulsive overeating really didn't reflect so much in my weight. But I have some memories of, you know, what I was doing when I was compulsively overeating. So, you know, my parents always took us to the movies and we'd get the big giant tub of popcorn and they'd let us pick out whatever chocolate candy we want and Twizzlers. That's always, you know, what we got. And I continued eating that through my adulthood, by the way. And then every Friday night, it was a treat. We always went to McDonald's. This was in the 70s, you know, and McDonald's was a big thing. So we'd go there every Friday night and we'd get our meal and get our hot fudge sundae. And, you know, I always left there feeling like it wasn't enough. I always wanted more, always. Some other childhood memories I have of food is, you know, my parents, they both worked full time. So my brothers who were older than me took care of me and my younger sister. And I just remember after school, it was a free for all. You know, we could eat whatever we wanted in the house because they weren't there. So, you know, sugary cereals, ice cream, whatever we wanted, we ate and I ate a lot. You know, it wasn't until high school that my weight started affecting me. I was a cheerleader, as I mentioned, since I was like 5 years old. And in high school, in the 80s, they had co-ed cheer team. It was kind of a newer thing. Now it's very popular, but back then it was kind of new. So my junior year, I was one of two juniors who made it on the varsity squad. So my senior year, you know, I just thought I was a shoo-in. You know, I would make the team, no question. And what ended up happening is all the senior boys, they all graduated. And so then we had all new boys that didn't, you know, had to learn how to do the tricks and learn how to lift. And I wasn't, you know, very overweight, but I was definitely, you know, muscular. I was a gymnast. So I was 128 pounds and the boys couldn't lift me. They couldn't lift me. I couldn't do any of the tricks during the tryout. Some of the senior boys were there trying to teach the younger boys and the senior boys, you know, that graduated already had to come back and help me. And I didn't make the team. I had been a cheerleader all my life and it was my senior year, my last hurrah, and I didn't make the team and I was devastated. That was the first time that I realized, my weight was definitely an issue. At least it was there. After high school, I worked at a daycare. I took care of toddlers and I always wanted to be the volunteer to be the cook. I always wanted to make the meals for the kids because then I knew I could get my hands on extra food. And I loved when it was mac and cheese and hot dogs. I cut up the little hot dogs, make the mac and cheese. And I always ate extra and then always ate off the kids' plates. You know, I had toddlers, 2 year olds, and no matter what germs they had or, you know, runny noses, it didn't matter. I cleaned up. in more ways than one. I cleaned up all their food. So early on, I definitely had some issues with food. Fast forward to getting married and, getting pregnant. I had a honeymoon baby. And, when I got pregnant, it was like, oh, bets were off. I could eat anything. And I didn't have to have any guilt or shame around that. I could eat whatever I wanted. And I, of course, went for the same kind of foods, McDonald's, ice cream, mac and cheese, all those types of foods. And I gained a lot of weight. When I gave birth to my daughter, I was 196 pounds and she was only 8 pounds of that. When she was little, I did the same type of thing. I cleared her plate. Whatever she didn't finish eating, I ate. I also baked a lot. I thought that was the at-home mom thing to do. I was working part-time out of my house, but I was still an at-home mom. So I was baking and doing a lot of things like that and eating, of course, everything I baked. My daughter would go trick-or-treating and bring home a whole bunch of Halloween candy, right? And so I always said to myself, I'm only going to have 3 pieces. So I'd pick my 3 favorite pieces and that's what I was going to have. Literally less than an hour later, and I would be talking to myself. I'd say, okay, no, I meant 3 pieces of my favorite chocolate candy and then 3 pieces of the non-chocolate candy. An hour later, I'd walk away. I'd come back to it and I'd say, no, what I really meant was I'm going to have 3 pieces of each of my favorite chocolate and then 3 pieces of each of my favorite that isn't chocolate. So I just justified these things in my head. And I, before you know it, all the candy was gone or nearly all of it. And then of course you have a crying child who says, where's all my candy? I ended up standing up in weddings. A lot of my friends were getting married at the time. So I was doing crash diets, like the cabbage soup diet or, the hard boiled egg diet or the banana diet, eat bananas for every meal. It was crazy stuff. And I did all those diets just so I could try to, lose weight and get ready to stand up in this wedding. Eventually, of course, I stopped losing weight, right? It didn't work anymore. So I started having marital problems, and around 1997, I went to my first Al-Anon meeting, and I was in Al-Anon, I worked the steps, I started sponsoring, and about 10 years later, one of my sponsees had mentioned Overeaters Anonymous, or OA, and I said, what's that? And she said, well, that's for compulsive overeaters. And I was like, so a little light bulb went on, like, I wonder if I need that program. I kind of think I do, So I had decided that I was going to go check it out. And in 2006, I went and checked out my first OA meeting. I knew exactly what I had to do because I had just come from another 12-step program. So I knew I had to get a sponsor. I had to work the steps and I had to start sponsoring. So I did. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps in the OA 12 and 12 and answered all those questions in chapter 4. And I lost weight. I did. I treated it like a diet and I lost a lot of weight. I white knuckled my way through. I didn't quite get the end though. I didn't really do the sponsoring part, right? I tried a little bit, but then when it didn't really work, I didn't pursue it any further. So I don't know that I really was fully recovered. I had been going to meetings for about 5 years and someone had mentioned the Big Book. And I said, oh, what's that all about? And I went to the Region 5 OA convention in Chicago that year. And there was a group of people reading the doctor's opinion. And I went into this room and they opened the book and it just came to life for me. It was the first time I ever heard anything about the doctor's opinion. And I was like, wow, these people really know what they're talking about. And someone handed me a card, a little, like it almost looked like a business card. And it said the coffee shop and it had some numbers on there and it was a phone meeting. And I was like, okay, cool. So I went home and started dialing into this coffee shop. So the phone meeting was great. It was really helping me. I learned a lot and started to get to know some of the people on there just by merely hearing their voices and hearing their stories. Well, they started having conventions and retreats. So I decided, you know, I'm gonna go to some of these. So I ended up going to a couple of retreats, Georgia, Rhode Island. I can't really remember all of them. And then I went to another Region 5 convention and there was a group gathered there. And I really wanted to do the steps through the big book. I wanted to go through the recovery process through the big book. So I started working with someone that was like a big book thumper. That's what they call her. So I was like, okay, I really want to work with you. Please help me get through the steps. So she started working with me. And again, I started losing weight. And it was like a step a month. My issue was, I guess I kept ending up back at step one. So I was moving through the steps very slowly. And what ended up happening was around, this was in 2011, by the way. And so around 2012, we started working together in October, early 2012. You know, I was just finished with my fourth step and we were going to do my fifth step. And she, and I had told her, I don't remember all the reasons why I went back to step one before, but I remember the last one. And it was that I had a piece of cheese on a sandwich. And she's like, oh, I think you're going for the fast. I think we got to go back to step one. And I was like, oh, I just finished step four. I was so upset. So I ended up agreeing with her and just said, all right, fine. But I was frustrated. You know, I really was. And at that same time, this phone meeting that I was going to, they ended up splitting and like a group of people went to one meeting and then another group went to another. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't pick between all these people. And I love them both. And I love them all. And, you know, at that point, I think just out of frustration, I thought, you know what? I'm at a normal body weight. I've lost enough weight. I've got this. I can do this myself. I quit the big book thumper. I quit the phone meetings and I quit OA. Altogether. And as you all can imagine, 3 years later, that was in 2012, 3 years later, I gained triple the amount of weight. I was 236 pounds. When I first went into OA, I was 186 pounds. Now I'm 236 pounds. So I had gained all my weight back and then some. And people from my home group were texting me, Denise, come back. You know, we miss you. We love you. Just come back. And I said, you know, I can't come back. I am way too overweight. I need to go on a diet before I can come back. I'm too embarrassed. I was so ashamed. And they said, it doesn't matter. We love you anyway. Just come back. And you have to understand my OA groups in you know, back in that time, they really didn't do the big book. Okay. So when I was going to these phone meetings and going to these conventions and retreats, I'd come back from them and I'd have the big book on my hip and I'd walk into my meetings and, you know, I just thought I had arrived. I mean, my ego was out to here and, you know, I'm sitting there trying to preach the big book when I really had no business doing so. And I was skinny, you know, I was small, I had healthy body weight. So they want me to come back and I'm 236 pounds. I'm 5'2", I'm short. So I'm huge. And I'm thinking, I can't come back. I can't come back. I'm too ashamed. Well, eventually, because I knew, you know, after reading the doctor's opinion, you know, your days of binging are kind of, you know, they're kind of over. There's no more joy in it because you know, you have this disease, right? So I went ahead and I went back, spent the next, I'd say 15 years just crying at every meeting. I couldn't get a week of abstinence under my belt. I mean, I might get a week, but then I'd lose it. And then I might get 2 days here and then I'd lose it. And, you know, three days here, et cetera. So I was in relapse from 2015 to 2021, 7 years. In 2019, 2020, I started listening to Vision. I knew about it all along. I just hadn't listened. So I started listening. One day on the recorded line, I heard one of my fellows from my local meeting on there. And I sent her a text and I said, was that you on Vision? And she said, yeah. And I said, what are you doing? like, she sounded great. I said, what are you doing? And she said, well, I got a vision sponsor and I work the 12 steps and I'm, you know, recovering. And I was like, wow. And then she told me who her sponsor was. And I was like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? I'm so jealous. And I thought, I want what she has. I want what she has. So I went ahead and decided that I was going to go on the live meeting for Vision. I was going to put my name and my number out there. So I did that in February. I put my name and number out there and I got so many phone calls. I was so overwhelmed. I did pick up the phone and talk to as many as I could, but I couldn't, you know, I couldn't call them all back. And I saved everyone in my phone, right? I saved everybody's name and number in my phone, but I just couldn't call them all back. I was too overwhelmed. That was in February of 2021. In July, now mind you, I didn't do anything, okay? I didn't pick up the phone. I didn't go, you know, reach out for recovery. I just stayed in my in relapse. In July of 2021, just this past July, I received a text from one of those people that left me a message, but had saved their names and numbers. And she said, you put your name out there in February, and I was just wondering how you were doing. And I was shocked. I'm like, how does she remember me? Why is this woman texting me? But the fact that she sent me a text and didn't call me, because you know the phone is like 800 pounds, you know. So the fact that she sent me a text, I felt a little bit more comfortable with that. So I sent her a text back and I said, to be honest, I'm not doing very well. I can't get a week under my belt. And she said, well, here, try these links to these meetings. And she sent me a bunch of links to meetings. This was a Saturday. So the first meeting from one of the links was on a Sunday. So I went on that Sunday meeting, but I couldn't stay for the newcomer part because I had church. So I had to log off right as the meeting ended. The next link was for a Monday night meeting, Recovery Jam. And I thought, okay, I'm just going to check it out. And I don't know why I was willing at this time to do it and I wasn't before, but I was. I clicked on Recovery Jam. And I came a little early, and that's when I met Janet. And she said, you know, hi, are you new? And I said, I'm new, yes, new to Recovery Jam. And she said, well, welcome. And then she, you know, asked me if I had a sponsor. And I said at that time, I didn't have a vision sponsor or a big book sponsor. And I said, no. And she said, well, give me a call. Again, I don't know where the willingness came from, but I called her. And at that point, I started working the steps. And for the first time, I felt like I was working them like my hair was on fire, you know, like they always talk about, but I never really understood it. I was in the hospitalization period and I had a vacation that was planned. It was very difficult to go on vacation when you're, you know, literally on steps 1, 2, and 3, but I couldn't change the vacation. It was a family vacation, so I had to go on vacation. I did all my due diligence. I you know, packed, weighed, measured, packed all my snacks, but I was in a hotel room, so I couldn't really cook. So I ended up, you know, pulling all the menus and figuring out what I was going to eat every day and sent it to my sponsor. And at one point, she had asked me about measuring spoons, and I said, I didn't bring measuring spoons. You know, I was just figured I would use the spoon that was on the table, you know. And she said, well, you really maybe should go buy some. Think about going to buy some. And I was like, okay. Well, I knew at home I had a bunch of sets of measuring spoons, and I knew I was only going to be there for 2 days. I was thinking about going to the store to buy them, but then I forgot, and then other things became more important. Needless to say, I didn't buy them. Well, I had to come home and fess up that I didn't buy the measuring spoons. And if someone would have told me 6 months ago that I would have been crying over measuring spoons and that it would have catapulted my recovery, I would not have believed you. But that's exactly what happened. At that point, when I had to fess up and say that I didn't follow direction, you know, my sponsor had said to me, maybe you're not willing to go to any length. maybe you're not willing to follow direction. And I was devastated. And I'll tell you, I have never weighed and measured my food. I came into OA in 2006 and I never owned a food scale until this past July. That's how willing I was. I bought a food scale, you know, and I started weighing and measuring my protein and everything. I never did that before. And I realized at that moment, I was no longer in charge. And that if I was going to get recovered, I had to stop running the show and I had to surrender. It was at that moment. And I was working, you know, on steps 2 and 3 at the time. And all I can say is at that time, I really started working the program. I was really relying on my fellows, those 3 calls a day. I did not want to make those 3 calls a day. I wanted to isolate, trust me, but I was making them. And on vacation, they saved me. Those calls saved me. And many of you on this meeting know who you are, saved me through that vacation. You helped me get through. And God, of course, saved me ultimately, but you guys were all there working through God, right? I ended up really starting to enhance my meditation time. And part of my meditation in the morning, you know, I have to pass a mirror on my way to the bathroom. And I always hated passing that mirror. And you know, you think, why wouldn't you just get rid of it, right? It's just been a family heirloom, so I kept it. But I passed by it and I just hated my body. I hated looking at myself. And I ended up stopping in front of the mirror during, you know, in the morning, during this meditation time. And I talked to God. I said, okay, God, this body is yours. If I have to get on the scale that day or whatever I did, I say, my weight, it's yours. You decide. You decide what I am going to be. And then I'd look at my face and I'd look in the mirror and I'd say, God, please direct my thinking today. Help me be useful to others. And I really started believing that God had me. You know, God's got my back. And, you know, a visual I used to use years ago in Al-Anon was I'd picture like these giant hands coming down from the sky. And then, you know, I'd put my ex-husband in there. I put my daughter in there. I put myself in there. I continue to visualize and just let God take care of me and direct me. And that's part of how I started to really trust and rely on God, is that I started just giving myself to God every day. I also, you know, spent time, you know, when I was in Al-Anon, my Al-Anon sponsor had told me this mantra that she used, and she told me to use, you know, that I could use it too. And she said, she says it 5 times in a row every morning. And it goes like this, God, show me where you are working and I will join you. Show me where you are working, God, and I will join you. And I say that every morning, 5 times in a row. And every time I say it, I think of Janet and how she talks about how we put on our hard hats and our tool belts, and we go out there and we start working for God and we work with others and help. And I have to say, you know, these random acts of kindness that my sponsor asked me to do, I started doing them, and I just felt like I was doing God's work. Every time I'd let a bus cut in front of me or you know, do any kind of random act of kindness, it just brought me closer to God. That's really all I can say, is I just started doing that. And really talking to my fellows, you know, all of you here in this meeting, many of you, that has brought me closer to God. And, you know, like I said before, I did not want to make those calls. Today, I need to make those calls. I want to make those calls. And I don't even count anymore. I mean, and if someone calls, I pick up the phone. And if I can't get to the phone, I'll call you back. You know, those calls mean everything to me. And I can't say enough about the program and of Recovery Jam and how much it has helped me, but mostly just how God has released, you know, 37 pounds so far today since I've been working in recovery with Recovery Jam. You know, it's so funny because I started at 186 in OA and I'm at 186 today, but I lost some weight, you know, in the middle there too. So, you know, it's just like everybody else's story. You're up one, down one, up one, up 10, down 10. So I'm super grateful for that, but more than the weight, it's life. I wasn't living my life before, guys. I really wasn't. And today I'm living. I'm happy and joyful and just so great to be with all of my fellows and working with all of you. So, I love my sponsor. I love this program and I love all of you. With that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Oh, thanks, Denise. That was really beautiful. I love your sponsor too. We are really fortunate here. We got great fellowship and support, good direction and a lot of love. And that's how people recover. So thank you so much for sharing your story. And I'm going to introduce the next speaker, which is going to be Faye. And I've been having the pleasure of sponsoring Faye. And, you know, we had met, I think it was a year before, maybe a year and a half before she had called me. And we had actually met in person way back when lots of things were in person. And I was speaking at an event and I was sponsoring a friend of hers. And we met and, you know, I thought she was really sweet. I really liked her. And then all this time later, she called me one day out of the blue and asked me, you know, started asking me for some help. And I just, you know, it's been a real pleasure to see Faye recover. She's got just a beautiful presence about her, a beautiful message. And so with that, I'm going to ask Faye if she would tell her story, please. Thanks, Faye.
Thank you, Melissa. Thank you so much. And Denise, thank you for that beautiful, beautiful qualification. And Lisa, thank you for opening with the third step prayer. I plug everything in my life today into that third step prayer, my marriage, my job, everything. And so I would like to plug this qualification into that prayer and just pray, God, I offer this qualification to you to build with it and to do with it as you will. Please relieve me of the bondage of self around this qualification that I may better do your will. And please take away any difficulties I might have with this qualification, that victory over them might bear witness to you and your power and your love and your way of life. May I do your will always, especially right now, because I'm a public speaker and I am freaking terrified right now. My heart is pounding, my hands are sweaty, because this is so important. I used to say that I have a 30-year history of relapse. I used to believe that I had a 30-year history of relapse. I walked into my first Overeaters Anonymous meeting in November of 1990. I walked up Lexington Avenue to a meeting on the Upper East Side of New York, unable to make eye contact with anyone because I was so filled with shame. I was so beaten down by the food. And it was a battle that I had been fighting since early childhood. I could tell you a million stories of crazy food behaviors. Just to illustrate who I am with food, I had a memory recently of being in first grade in my first grade classroom, and I used to love Felix the cat, which probably dates me, but you know, Felix the cat, the wonderful, wonderful cat. And Felix had this magic bag of tricks that he could like open up and pull anything out of at any time. Like whenever he got into whenever he got in a fix, he opened up his little bag of tricks, and he would open up his bag of tricks and pull out like exactly what he needed. Oh, a hammer, you know, or oh, an umbrella. And I remember sitting in Mrs. Tom's first grade classroom, wishing that I had a bag like Felix and that I would pull a refrigerator out of that bag. I was a first grader. I was in the first grade sitting there wishing I had a refrigerator that I could just go to and I could just get anything out of it, whatever I wanted at any time. And I used to fantasize that the water fountains at school would have Coke and lemonade and sugary drinks. Like, I just thought that would be the ultimate. The toy that I most wanted was an easy bake oven. I prayed, literally prayed for an easy bake oven. I would sit on the front porch at night, starlight, star bright, first star I see tonight. I wish I may, I wish I might. God, please give me an easy bake oven. Please give me an easy bake oven. I didn't get one. I couldn't think of anything better in the whole wide world than to be able to make a cake in my bedroom, you know? But my daddy was an electrician and he didn't want me to have an electrical toy. And my mama owned a beauty shop and she didn't want me to be fat. Which, you know, unfortunately happened fairly early. I didn't know I was fat until I was on the swings one day at school. And this very cute little boy came up and he said, "You're fat." And I said, "I am?" And I was suddenly filled with shame. And, you know, children can be mercilessly cruel. And so I was teased mercilessly at school. And my mother, who is beautiful and very controlled, I know she's not like me. She's not like me. She saw her baby being teased and tortured, and she empowered me in the only way she knew how, which was to take me to Weight Watchers. So I went to Weight Watchers when I was about 9, and my mom would put my food on the scale for me. She would weigh and measure my food. She went to great effort to make my food yummy in that disgusting like 1970s Weight Watchers way, which was like peach cobbler. It's a piece of bread rolled out with some canned peaches and some sweet and low. You know, it's disgusting. But she went to such great efforts to help me. I went through a phase in therapy where I thought she was so horrible. She was trying to change me because she was mortified that I was fat, Dr. Cohen. And she wanted me to be pretty so I could be a reflection of her. I know now that she wanted to help me and she didn't know what to do. She had this baby who was in pain. And I was in pain. I was in a lot of pain, and not just because I was fat, although I did believe for most of my life that if I was thin, I wouldn't have any pain. I really thought that if I was skinny, life would be amazing. Everything would work out. I learned later that that was not the case, but I believed it. I believed that at the time. So I tried really, really hard. Weight Watchers worked. Like every diet, my sponsor always says, and it's so true, every diet works. They work. They work until they don't. And every diet I ever did worked until it didn't. So Weight Watchers didn't work because my mom would weigh and measure my food during the week. But then at the weekend, I would go to my granny's house. And my granny was, I believe, one of us. My grandpa had just died. He died when I was 7. And she was grieving. She was in a lot of pain. And she was medicating with food and comforting herself and eating for comfort. And I was the light of her life. She was the light of my life. And she and I would eat together. So all week I would eat, you know, canned tuna and canned green beans weighed and measured at home. And then I would go to Granny's house and we would make sandwiches out of graham crackers and Betty Crocker Red Is Bread frosting, you know, and it just felt like love and it felt beautiful and it felt like heaven. Also, my house was a little scary. My dad had some trauma. He had PTSD from his childhood. And unlike me, he didn't have the luxury of therapy and recovery and all the healing modalities I have access to. He lived in trauma and pain, and sometimes he acted that out. And I was terrified. I was terrified a lot of the time. And I knew from experience that food made me feel better. Like food made me feel better. That sugar would hit my system and I would feel better, or I would eat something fatty and it would calm me down. And I was like a little alchemist. Even as a child, I was like an alchemist. I knew exactly what to eat to get where I needed to go. And mostly where I needed to go was away, like out of the room, get me out of here. And that is the function food served for me for so much of my life. Life would get hard or scary, and I would hit the escape button, and it was always there, it was always accessible, and it was always effective. I believe now that I am very bodily different from other people. I don't think that food takes my husband out of the room the way it takes me out of the room. And not just physiologically, like just knowing something was in the house or that I had access to something would take me out of the room. Because in addition to being physically anesthetizing, food was the great conversation changer. Like it was so much easier to think about, what am I gonna eat? What am I gonna eat? Or what did I eat? Or should I not have, I shouldn't have eaten that. How am I gonna get rid of that? How am I gonna not, oh my gosh, now I'm gonna get fatter. Oh my gosh, I'm fat. That conversation is so much easier than I am terrified or I'm in pain or whatever was going on with me emotionally. Food served that purpose for me my whole life. So when I walked into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous in 1990, there was a beautiful woman sitting at the front of the room. It was a beginner's meeting. And she said, she explained our condition. She laid it out and she said, listen, she said, if you're like me, you have a physical allergy to certain foods. And once you start eating them, you can't stop. She said, I have certain foods that affect me the way alcohol affects the alcoholic. And she said, we use this book. And I know I'm a textbook compulsive overeater addict because we have a textbook and it describes me in great detail. And she introduced me to this book that night. And she said, we are bodily different from our fellows. And there are certain foods that once I start eating them, I can't stop.
To get a mirror for you, see how cute you are.
This was mortifying to me because it was simultaneously a great relief. Like, oh my gosh, this is not my fault. Like there's, you know, and you're like me, you did that too. Like you ate frozen food. You ate burnt food. You ate food you dropped on the floor. You ate out of a garbage can. Like my deepest, most horrific secrets were coming out of the mouths of a room full of strangers. It was like, oh my God, there's a name for it. I'm not alone. It was thrilling, but it was also mortifying because I was looking down the road and I was like, oh, well, if this is true, then the only hope for me is to stop eating those foods. And I wasn't willing to do that. So there was a question and answer thing at the end. And I raised my hand and I said, how do you know if you are one of these compulsive eaters? How do you know if you are one? Because I'm not really sure that I am. And she said, well, maybe you're not. And it was like, I could feel those prison bars closing, you know, chung, chung. And I was like, no, I am. So I started working the program of Overeaters Anonymous. However, I didn't start working the steps. I started going to meetings. I started listening to other people's stories. I started telling my stories. I got some relief from some of the shame. We had these great posters on the wall that said beautiful things. I had a vague idea. I knew it was about God, which was great because I loved God. I've always loved God. I've loved God since childhood. And it was like, oh yeah, yeah, I can believe God can take this. I can believe that. I started leading meetings, not having worked the steps. I said, guys, we need a promises meeting because we have this poster with the promises on it. And I was like, those are beautiful. We need a promises meeting and I'll lead it, guys. I'll lead it. So we would meet every week and every week we would do a different promise. And it was like, it was basically a power of positive thinking meeting. And we would talk about these beautiful promises and some of which were, you know, kind of coming true. Like I was no longer alone. I mean, I was getting relief. I could see how some of these promises were kind of true for me. I no longer regretted the past because it now bonded me to my friends. So surely these are coming true, right? So I would lead the promises meeting with M&Ms in my pocket. And then we would all go out to eat afterward. And we had created our own food plans. The thing that I learned was you create your food plan and we'll teach you how to follow it. So I was like, okay, anything goes, three meals a day. And of course I became sicker and sicker. I wasn't recovering. I then went to another program where everything was very, very weighed and measured strictly. I chose a sponsor because she was a celebrity. And I wanted to talk to her and be connected to her because she was a celebrity, because that's who I am. And that's what I've learned is my real problem. I came in thinking I had a fat problem and learned that I had a food problem. And then I learned I don't have a food problem. I have a life problem. Like I have a life problem. And what happened when I put down the food and that weighed and measured plan on that weighed and measured food plan and removed most of my alcoholic foods is that the feelings came up. And I've heard people say in the Vision for You meeting, you know, yes, abstinence makes you feel better. You know, you feel anger better. You feel pain better. You feel fear better. I was really feeling all, and I came face to face with all the things that made me pick up in the first place, all the things that I needed to change the conversation away from. Basically, I came face to face with me and my ego. And my desire to control or to try to control the whole world to serve me, you know? So that I could feel better, so that I could look better, so that you would like me, so that I could be pretty or popular or not. My whole world revolved around me and how I felt. And what you thought about me, especially. Perfect example, a girlfriend of mine is dying. And when I, just before I came into recovery here, we had a going away party for her. She was basically going home to be in hospice. And I said to my sponsor, you know, there's this thing, but I really don't think I should go because I don't think I should go because I, you know, I'm in the hospitalization phase, but the truth is I didn't want to go because I didn't want everyone to see that I was fat. Like I didn't want everyone to see how much weight I had gained. That's who I am without recovery. That's who I am without God. And what I have received in this program is a way to be connected to God, to be connected to something greater than myself. And my life is about so much more today than the size of my ass. It's about so much more than me. In the big book, in the doctor's opinion, the doctor says, the unselfishness of these men as we've come to know them, the entire absence of profit motive and their community spirit is indeed inspiring. They believe in themselves and still more in the power which pulls chronic alcoholics back from the gates of death. Working the steps the way they're laid out in this book with my sponsor has not only pulled me back from the gates of death physically, but it's pulled me back from the gates of death spiritually and emotionally. My life is not just all about me today. I really care. I care about you. I care about you. And my hands are sweating and my heart is beating, not because I need you to adore me or think that, wow, that was the facial and the facial was great. It's because I know now that this is the God show. This is not the Faye show, and I am not the star. This is the God show. And I am filled with gratitude. And I think probably as my time, I don't know how much time I have, but I would like to just, if I may, there's one more thing I just wanted to share, which is that in There Is a Solution, we have found much of heaven and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. My life has meaning and purpose today, and P.S. I'm getting skinny, so that's great. And thank you for letting me share.